Headlines Today with Will Faulkner on Midlands 103. Midlands
103. As you've been hearing in the last week, the Data Protection Commissioner is investigating how five credit unions here in the Midlands came to be in possession of personal information about customers that could only have been obtained illegally. It seems they used private investigators, or tracing agents if you prefer, to get certain details. Now, what they may not have realised is the means by which these people went about their work. It's alleged they contacted the Department of Social Protection and effectively blagged certain details. So it raises questions on many fronts. Why your local credit union would be involved? Why the Department of Social Protection was so easily duped into disclosing private details? Are other data holders just as vulnerable? And within what constraints must private investigators work? Well, he can't speak to those other points, but Carson Cloney from Cloney Legal Services in Portlaoise is well versed in the practices by which private investigators must operate. Carlson, good morning.
Hi, Will. How are you?
Just to get an understanding, I suppose, first of all, of why financial institutions would seek the services of a private investigator, what type of information might they be looking for?
Well, financial institutions may seek to enforce judgments against their customers for the repayment of debts. And so they may contract a private investigator to locate a missing debtor.
So they want to locate this person. Might they also be interested in whether that individual is working, whether they have an income, whether they're in a position to service their debt?
Absolutely. Well, in terms of private investigators, you're talking about two products there. One is a tracing service trying to locate the individual, and then the second is a due diligence aspect. It's a lifestyle report, and so a financial institution may seek to, in the first instance, just locate the person, and in the second instance, see if their lifestyle concurs with their statement of means, which is completely reasonable in terms of their financial contract with an individual.
So separating out those two aspects for a moment and dealing with the tracing element first, obviously, the Department of Social Protection would have records if somebody was drawing down the dole, for instance, in a particular area. But that's a matter between that individual and the department. What would be the legal mechanisms by which a private investigator could try to locate you if you decided you didn't want to be found?
Yeah, well, I think you have to take it in the context of privacy on the one hand and the right of individuals to enforce their contracts on the other. And so some people may decide that they're going to disappear, and that has to be thought of in the terms of the right to be forgotten and their data protection rights. But then others who have contracts with them may seek to enforce their debts. And so how one can be located legally is just through databases that are publicly available. They might be as simple as a phone book or a voter's register, and if that information anyone can access through the media. Many people are in newspapers and on online reports, and so locating an individual can be done quite legally, and due respects and adherence to their privacy and data protection rights.
Right, so as a private investigator, you would be perfectly entitled to scour newspaper reports. What about social media, for instance? Would that be an avenue that could be explored as well?
Oh, absolutely. I think, since we have the omnipresence of the internet, people are leaving a digital footprint behind them, and in many cases it can be used then to locate them or to learn more about them.
So if it's in the public domain, it's fair game. What's off limits then?
Well, I think any of the state databases are absolutely off limits, and I think that's what we've seen here is this practice of blagging. I wasn't aware that it was actually happening in Ireland. I had become aware of it due to the Levenston inquiry in the UK, where Theresa May came out and said that this blagging of databases was ongoing, and anyone who was involved in it would not be able to apply for a licence, and the Irish private investigators are due to be licensed within the next 2 years. So it's a very serious topic regarding this blagging, and so at places that you can't go as a private investigator, as these databases belonging to the state, and also those databases belonging to large corporations, be they the ESB or telephone companies, because people need to be able to give them their information in confidence that it won't be accessed illegally. I think that's in the public interest.
But the legal barrier in this instance is the data protection law. There is no regulatory framework at present within which private investigators must adhere.
Private investigators are not licensed currently, and so they're unregulated in that regard, but the Data Protection Act does impose obligations on data processors, which are private investigators, and so Section 22 of the Act prescribes accessing data illegally and sharing that data, and I think that's what's happened in the case we're talking about today.
To broaden the discussion then and bring in the other element of work that a private investigator might be asked to do on behalf of an institution, if somebody is working, if, for instance, they've made an insurance claim of a personal injury nature, but in fact they're living quite a contented, active life despite portraying a different version in court, is a private investigator allowed to covertly pursue that person to survey them and to report back?
In the sense that we have these competing interests, those who have been subject to some sort of accident may be entitled to compensation, and those who are going to have to pay the compensation are entitled to verify the veracity of the claim. And so video evidence, surveillance evidence obtained in a public place is admissible. And so in terms of gathering that evidence, you can gather that in accordance with the subject's right to privacy, data protection rights, and so forth, without, you know, it's not prejudicial to them.
So again, the distinction there, you said in a public place.
Absolutely, in a public place, yeah.
Now, it is a hotel, for instance, a public place, if somebody is at a function? Or is it private?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. It would be a public place insofar as it's a public house, so it's open to members of the public. However, there may be questions around, does one have permission to video in the hotel? And then that you start to move into an area, well, is this now intelligence or is it actually admissible as evidence? And so you definitely start to come very close to the line when you're on a private property. And I know of similar cases in England where, for example, video evidence was obtained in a bed and breakfast, and this was deemed to be a breach of privacy.
But simply by virtue of being private property, it may not render a location a private place. It could still be public.
Absolutely. If it was open to the public, in terms of if it was a business inviting members of the public in, perhaps then your evidence obtained there may be admissible. But a lot of these questions would be, and subjects would be argued by lawyers, barristers, and decided by judges. And it's quite open to debate and proceedings. But I would be of the opinion that evidence gathered in public and, you know, in around places where the public can go, be it supermarkets or hotels, would be admissible.
But it strikes me that you have case law to consider if you're a private investigator. You have the primary legislation. Then you have grey areas as well. You need to be very well versed as to what you're entitled to do in the course of your work and what is straying into illegality. Now, in the absence of a licensing system, is there a representative body? Is there a training body? Is there any adherence or any standards set for your industry?
The only standard that was set in terms of guidelines for the activities of private investigators were issued by the Data Protection Commissioner. They're published on his website. And otherwise than that, there was an attempt to found a private investigators association. As far as I know, it hasn't got any further as yet. The National or the Institute of Irish Security or the Irish Security Institute, they offered to set up a course, but that hasn't gone any further. So there is a little bit of a vacuum in terms of guidelines and best practice in the area. However, there is big questions here to be addressed in terms of, as a financial institute, you do have a right to reclaim your debt. You do have a right to issue proceedings to verify whether or not someone is living in accordance with their state of means. That's fine. And then you have the competing interests of people's privacy. And I think there has to be a public debate on those issues so that we can put best practice in place.
Well, in effect, one set of rights must be balanced against another. And perhaps in the formation of a licensing system, that very debate will take place. Just one final question, though. We've had this discussion in the context of financial institutions wanting to find out more information about customers or debtors. But what other types of client would, and you can only speak, I suppose, for your own company, but what other types of client would be interested in finding out more about an individual?
Generally, those involved in a legal dispute want to and have the right to put forward the best case possible. And so my job is to gather evidence in order to enhance their legal prospects. And so you can have individuals engaged in employment litigation, engaged in debt resolutions, and also in family law matters. And so if people believe that, or if individuals, businesses, corporations believe that there is an element of dishonesty or that they need to enhance their position through an investigation, obtaining evidence, perhaps a period of surveillance, then they're entitled to put forward the best case possible in that sense.
Mm. And incidentally, surveillance, does that involve pursuit? And I mean that in this, I don't mean a high-speed chase scenario, but simply if somebody leaves their home to go to another location, is it within your right to follow them?
Yes. If an individual, for example, was engaged in an activity which was contrary to a claim they were making in court, then you might be required to follow them from point A to point B, and that would be done covertly, and the video evidence would be obtained at the location. And so I don't believe that there's any particular problem with that. The only place you may run into difficulty is Section 10 of the Non-Fatal Offences Against the Person Act, which prohibits stalking specifically, and but that actually requires a persistent interference with an individual's rights, whereas a one-off surveillance period, I would argue, does not constitute a persistent interference in that regard.
Hmm. Well, perhaps if the ends justify the means, but if you were to follow an individual and they're perfectly innocent of whatever they're suspected of, could that complicate the scenario?
Well, as an investigator, you must approach it from an impartial standpoint. You may work on a hypothesis, but they may well not be involved in the activities they're suspected of, and therefore your video evidence or surveillance or your investigation may completely exonerate them from that. And as an investigator, you have to be able to say, well, look, the evidence shows that they are not engaged in any sort of a fraud or dishonesty. And so one has to be able to stand over your evidence and complete a comprehensive investigation in that regard, giving due regard to the individual's right to privacy and so forth.
And just one other matter. I know the final theme we were to close on was the other type of client you might have apart from financial institutions. A number of listeners are curious, would you be required in a domestic scenario where a partner suspects their other half is cheating?
Yes, often. And also in family law disputes, in disputes around marital infidelity and disputes around maintenance payments.
Fascinating area of discussion. Carlson, thank you very much for joining us on Midlands 103 this morning.
My pleasure, Will. Thanks for having me on.
That's Carlson Cloney of Cloney Legal Services in Portlaoise.